How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply. Third hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on this Thursday afternoon. Hope everybody's having a good day.
We're going to have an experiment now with Darren fighting through the cold, the wintry voice. It happens every year to all of us at some point. We're going to try the Roman Yossi special treatment. A little Ricola.
You gave me one, so I'm going to see if this works.
I think you got to have some of that. Hey, we're going out to Western Canada next week. That's why I got the brand new bag. You guys were ripping on my huge bag of Ricola.
Huge bag of them.
They might stop me at customs for that.
Yeah, what's in the bag, sir?
That's some Ricola.
Willie, I'm going to say this.
Roman Yossi gave it to me.
This is so up your alley, what we're about to do.
No, I'm excited. Well, I got my study guide and
this
everything.
This is like nerd alert. This is the best.
Oh, yeah.
Willie can put your...
I'm going to tell the story here.
Pull that pocket protector out of your bag. Slap it on, man. You're going to love this. You can put some tape in between those glasses.
Compass.
Oh, man. This is so up your alley. Calvin Smith.
Electronic pencil.
There you go.
You know, they put the...
Like, even Calvin's
pencil.
Uncomfortable with this conversation.
Not electronic,
I don't even
mechanical.
Know what most of these things you guys are talking about are.
Now, Calvin is very young. He is on our staff. He does a really good job. You're currently in, what, grad school at Georgia Tech?
Yeah, studying analytics at Georgia Tech.
Which, it's pretty amazing because we didn't have this opportunity. Not that I would have ever been smart enough to do it, but when we were in school, like some of these majors you can get now, because there are so many kids your age that I talk to that are absolutely going down the analytics path in school, which we didn't have, like I said, we didn't have that opportunity.
Well, yeah, it's really interesting because the field of data science as a whole is growing in a huge way and is being applied to seemingly every single industry out there. And that's a lot of what the basis of it is going beyond just like HTML code and programming websites and stuff. Now you can use all these tools you have at your disposal to create insights for seemingly anything. And once we start applying it to sports, you've seen how it's changed baseball. Basketball is really coming up now. The NHL with their puck tracking technology is coming. And then the NFL, next-gen stats. Everything we can learn about the games we love so much is changing, and it shows us optimal strategies.
There's a lot of analytics already there for hockey, and they haven't even gotten to the full player tracking, which is coming.
They unveiled that for the All-Star game, right?
They've been working on it for the last several years, and once you have that, it's even going to be – baseball is the same way. Right? They're doing it, right? You can now
– StatCast.
They have those StatCasts when the center fielder runs into the gap to make a play. They track how fast is the ball dropping, how far did the guy run, how many miles per hour did he go.
What's the catch probability on that play?
Exactly. And so now, whereas for generations, you were like, I think Darren's a good center fielder. He's pretty fast. But there was no way to measure it. You're like, is he just other than observation, right? Is he making the plays? But now you have more data to support your theories.
And you can calculate things to this level of precision that's incredibly impressive based on years of data we can accumulate. So you talk about all the stuff that comes out of StatCast in baseball. Well, that's been around for a few years now. So as you dedicate yourself, your organization, your entity to gathering data and studying the insights, it only starts to build off of itself, kind of like in a compounding interest way where you learn this, so then you can learn another thing and then get more accurate results and find different ways to apply data to your everyday operations.
Teron Davenport was, I think, making his way back from Mobile on Friday night. So we were out and about this past Friday night. And Willie, this is when I heard this, and it really got my attention. You know, if nerd talk gets my attention, it's pretty good, because usually that does not get my attention. But you were with Chase, because Teron was coming back, and you guys were, you had brought up with this formula, which I still, like, once again, a lot of this is going to be over my head, but you had like this, the analytics on kind of like A.J. Brown and Corey Davis and their comparables. And see, that's like when you start talking my language, when you start comparing them to people. Mm-hmm. So I want you to kind of break down what I heard. I was fascinated by the conversation. I was fascinated by the groupings that the numbers will tell you. A.J. Brown, what his comparables look like, what Corey Davis's comparables look like. Willie, you're going to want to hear this too, because I think it's really interesting.
It's a great way to sort of put some data behind what we see, right? We all have our eye test. So how does this match up with the eye test?
Yeah, so what you're alluding to is something called a K-means clustering algorithm. And that's, I'm not going to go into anything about what that does or how it works, but essentially what it does is it aims to group similar players or whatever you want to compare variables by the attributes you give it.
Yeah, so in other words, Calvin is doing the math for you. Darren.
Yes, I know. That's why I like it.
I'm all for that. Right? I don't have to do the
he
math.
He does all the hard work, hands me a sheet of paper. I'm like, oh, great.
This looks good.
There's all the names on it. So what it does is it clusters these players into groups based on the data I'm giving it. So what I did simply was I went to nextgenstats.com, extracted the data from the website of what they're calculating. So things, simple things like catch percentage, yards after catch, targets. But then you can get a little bit more complex when you're using next gen stats data. So you can talk about like their average separation from their nearest defender when they were targeted for a pass, or the cushion they're given by a defense at the line of scrimmage. So with really fast players, they'll get more cushion. Slower players, you might want to get in their face a little bit more and kind of knock them off their routes early. So you're playing different wide receivers and tight ends in these different ways, and that can be reflected in the next gen stats data. And what's really good about using what's called machine learning algorithms, which this is one of them, what's really good about being able to use those is you can analyze more than two variables at once. So you can take a look at all these different things. It came out to like 14 different things at once, and compare them and then measure how close they are to each other and create comparables from that. So basically what I did was I applied that to the NFL this season, and I took a look at 2019 wide receivers and tight ends. And I thought, okay, well, you know, Corey Davis, A.J. Brown, those are the two big guys for the Titans. So how does A.J. Brown compare? And so as I went through this process, I kept seeing some really good comparisons for A.J. Brown. And then you're thinking like, okay, well, let's put it out on paper. Guys like Mike Evans, Odell Beckham, Cortland Sutton, Michael Gallup are some of the guys in A.J. Brown's grouping. And then you kind of take a full look at it. There's also some lesser receivers, Mike Williams is, Tyrell Williams, in this one group he was assigned to. But still, the company A.J. Brown is in is basically in the second tier of NFL wide receivers in the league. As a rookie, him and Terry McLaurin were probably the two top rookies, as well as DK Metcalf.
Yep.
They were all grouped together as well based on the attributes of what they produced and how defenses played them. So when I was looking at this, I thought, wow, this is really impressive and gives you a really concrete look at how you can compare what A.J. Brown did this season and how he really is the number one wide receiver on this Titans team. And there's not really much debate beyond that at this point based on, one, what we saw just watching the games, and then, two, once you dig in more and compare him to the scope of the league, you see this one top elite tier with all the receivers you'd expect. And then there's this second tier where you have some top wide receivers like the Mike Evanses, the Odell Beckhams, Kenny Galladay for one.
Is Stephon Diggs in his category?
Stephon Diggs is in his category. So then another very, very good wide receiver who you could say is comparable to A.J. Brown in 2019 and what they did and how they produced based on this clustering.
How do you factor in the volume of chances each guy gets? Because, you know, there might be a certain receiver who has 50 targets and he catches, you know, 45 or something like that, and you're saying, wow, that's very efficient. And then there's guys, hey, we got to throw this ball to this guy a lot. He's got 100 targets. So how do you factor in the efficiency based on how many times they're getting the ball thrown to him?
So some of the, you could call these variables that I gave the algorithm to consider were targets, which is how many times they were throwing the ball, catches, and their catch percentage, so the percentage of passes they caught. And then so it'll take all of these in and then plot them in this great dimensional space, right? And that's how machine learning works, is it plots things across more than three dimensions, four dimensions. In this case, I think it was 14 dimensions where it can compare these things. And it gets pretty high level and kind of messes with your brain.
We just have 3D. You know, when you go to the movies, it's 3D. We're talking 14D.
You talk about these things that just, they kind of mess with your brain when you think about how large the data can kind of get. But that's how you do that, is when you can plot things in multidimensional space like this and then can compare their distances from each other and targets, catches and catch percentage were part of that evaluation.
So let's take a couple of different Titans receivers and kind of put them through the washing machine that you got here. Like Tajae Sharpe, he didn't get a lot of passes thrown to him, but he was very efficient, I would say, in how he responded to the opportunities he had. He was a very good role player. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, so basically with Tajae Sharpe and Adam Humphries, this is where, like, no analysis is perfect, right?
Right.
So when you talk about, like, a guy like Adam Humphries...
That's why you have to match it up with, the eye test, right? The coaches that have to comprehend this stuff.
Yeah, you have to take it all and, like, account for everything because it's very hard for an accurate algorithm to accomplish every task you want it to. So you have to take a holistic view at it. But when you look at guys like Tajae Sharpe and Adam Humphries, like, Adam Humphries was injured. So that's going to hurt his stock. And obviously, a wide receiver is going to be greatly impacted by quarterback play. And then when you look at a guy like Tajae Sharpe for the Titans, as I'm pulling him up on the database right now, you see a guy who comes in a fairly mediocre group. So you're you're not terribly encouraged by Tajae Sharpe, but at the same time, you know that he did have a role with this team. It's just that you're not... That's not someone who I would be rushing to sign based on what you know about his comparables. Mm.
Okay. Well, we've been glowing about A.J. Brown, so now let's get to another guy that we have had plenty of debates on over time, and that's Corey Davis. Because I thought, given the fact that you're giving Derrick Henry the ball a lot,
the highest rate in the league.
Right. So you're not throwing as much. When you do throw, A.J. Brown is becoming the number one target. Ryan Tannehill has a very good ability to spread the ball around to some other guys. So Corey Davis wasn't getting the ball thrown to him very often. So how do you evaluate him?
Yeah, so that's part of the target thing. And then also there are efficiency metrics you can account for when you're looking at this. And as you create these comparisons, some of the guys who came up with Corey Davis, there were Zay Jones's, Ted Ginn's, Breshad Perriman's. But in the same group, there was Adam Thielen. But... remember, this is where you have to take the whole picture into account. Adam Thielen was hurt for a good portion of the Vikings season. And then there are also, like, Brandon Cooks's, but also tougher offense this season. They weren't that efficient, and Brandon Cooks struggled with some injuries. So Alshon Jeffrey's another one who was in Corey Davis's grouping, but another guy who was injured. So when you're going through these Corey Davis comparisons, you're not seeing anybody who you're like, whoa, Corey Davis was in the group with that guy? And like I've said, this is accounting for how a defense treats you to an extent. It is accounting for what you produced in terms of efficiency and in terms of volume. And with Corey Davis, there are those signs of optimism because there is upside in his cluster with some of the guys I just mentioned. But at the same time, nothing that gives you the encouragement of what you saw from A.J. Brown in terms of comparisons across every aspect.
So A.J. Brown grades out extremely well with your metrics here. We have talked a lot about, with Corey Davis and the stage of his career that he's reaching, is all of the tools that John Robinson will use. Like, I'm curious how much he uses this kind of data along with what his coaches are telling him to where you place value on his next contract. Do you get a fifth year option? Do you try to sign him to a more of a team friendly deal now? I mean, these are all the things that you have to weigh.
Yeah.
When you determine, okay, once the rubber meets the road, maybe Corey Davis wants more money, et cetera, you got to be able to decide, what are these numbers telling me? Am I willing to walk away after not going to a certain point, or do I need to pay extra to keep this guy?
Yeah, so a great way to be able to calculate a market value for something like this is when you get a cluster of wide receivers or a player, then you can just go say, okay, well, how much does the average player in this cluster make? And then if Corey Davis comes in and asks for more money than where you've grouped him, then you say, no, based on what we've gotten from you, we really can't pay you because players who are similar to you are making this. And if you want this, X number of dollars, you're probably not worth it. So then from there, I think that's just a pretty easy way of determining market value. And then there's a lot of other ways you get a bit more intricate if you want to like project into the future or something like that. And as you can incorporate more things into your models, your algorithms, as a team, you can talk about a lot more of the next-gen data that's not public access. You can create a much more accurate look at the precise intangibles and tangibles of the player, like their speed and all these different things, as you incorporate that in and group them with their cluster to compare them to that.
Okay, we'll also talk about Ryan Tannehill. We'll get into a lot more on the other side with Calvin Smith here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Calvin Smith in studio with us at Smith A. Calvin. He's on our staff. He's a young whippersnapper who's really smart.
And I hope so.
You are. And he is in grad school at Georgia Tech. I heard Calvin bringing up a lot of this stuff on Friday night here on our airwaves. And for a guy like me who a lot of this is over my head, I got to be honest, it was really interesting to listen to how all this, because you get my attention when you talk about comparables, when you compare this guy to this guy and you have groups, and that's where it really gets my attention. So before we get back into that, there's so many now sites out there, Pro Football Focus, we talk about, we reference. How much stock do you put into what they're doing? Like, who do you pay closer attention to than others? Who do you think maybe it's not on the level that it should be? I'm not looking for you to trash anybody,
no,
but
yeah.
There's a lot of sites out there. There's a lot of people trying to do this. When you look at them, what do you see?
When I look at Pro Football Focus, they are the crux of everything that's going on in football right now. So like, they're kind of like the hot topic, right? And how I look at their player grading system, because that's what makes the most headlines, right? Is you get on Twitter, you go on their website, whatever, and you see
they grade out the top five players.
You see that the Rams left guard, you know, got a 90 grade 5 minutes after the game ended.
Yep.
So I try to take the first player grades that come out with kind of, okay, it's a fairly accurate representation. I'm not going to say that it's not worth anything, because they usually put people in positions to grade this stuff that know the generals of football to where they can at least put a fairly informed opinion and account for a good amount of the tasks being asked of players. But at the same time, it's so subjective. So there is this incredible trade-off of subjectivity, and the person grading them doesn't know the play call. They don't know what was asked of the player specifically. So how much stock do I put into Pro Football Focus specifically? A fair amount, but I'm not going to like stake my word on what Pro Football Focus says from their player grading standpoint. Now, when you talk about them and what they do in terms of data science and these full-scale kind of studies they do on the NFL that a lot of NFL teams pay pretty good money for to have access to and to use for their analysts, then yeah, I put some good stock into their overarching studies of the NFL, because they have hired a lot of really smart analysts who know what they're doing and can help you generate good insights about your football team. Just most of the time, those are private. So the player grades, I'm kind of iffy on, but Pro Football Focus on as a whole, I like, and I think there's a reason a lot of NFL teams use them.
So Pro Football Focus, do they use the player tracking very much? Is that what you're saying? Because I do because what you said is what I've heard, is that you have more of an evaluator, right?
They just do have an evaluator.
Almost like a coach grading a tape, right? As much as the actual data and player tracking. And then you have a place like Football Outsiders that for a while was just doing it off of the score sheet, right? They were doing a lot of what they were doing. They were doing the analytics based on just situations and things like that, and making their assessment of a game, trying to get to the next level of just flat-out yards and flat-out yards per carry and put it in the context of the game.
Yeah.
But it's all evolving, right, every year.
Oh, yeah.
But it's like the player tracking, as we were talking about before we got on the air, it's really evolving.
Well, the player tracking data is what's going to fundamentally change the game of football. Yeah. And I come on here and I say that with the utmost confidence and prepared to stake my whole career on it. Like, player tracking data is going to teach us so much more about the game of football than we could ever have hoped to learn in any other way, just because of how precise it can be and how it can account and give you data on every single thing happening at 10 frames per second. But in terms of Pro Football Focus using player tracking data, if I'm not mistaken, I'm not 100% sure on this, they have access to it, but they aren't fully developed to where they have that in the public sphere yet. But I'm fairly certain they have access to it and can use it from some aspect. Who uses the player tracking data the best, in my opinion? ESPN. ESPN has a whole analytics department. For football, they're basically spearheaded by this guy named Brian Burke, who's brilliant and is one of considered one of the fathers of football analytics. You'd put him on our Mount Rushmore, if you will. But so they're going to keep incorporating these things into like Monday Night Football. They have coverage identifications. They have pass blocking win rate grades, so they can grade pass blocking based on how well you're doing with the tracking data. They can identify routes and route combinations. ESPN does a fantastic job with all of that, and they're really starting to scratch the surface of what we can learn using tracking data.
So let's go back to the wide receivers before we get into the quarterbacks.
Okay.
So let's go over the elite group. And what's interesting is, as we talk about Super Bowl 54, what's jumping out to me is, seems like there's some players in the elite group on one team, but I don't see some representation from the other team. So let's look at wide receivers, and you've even got some tight ends thrown in there.
Yeah.
So speaking of that, Kansas City, Tyreek Hill, elite receiver. He's in elite group, which is the what is this? Was this gold, green? What is this?
I don't know. So the I kind of just told the computer, just give me a random color, as long as I get six different colors.
Okay. So in this group, you've got Tyreek Hill, no surprise there. Michael Thomas, no surprise there. DeAndre Hopkins. Allen Robinson, a little bit surprised. Elite group.
Yeah, so I think when you account for all of the data that NextGen has on their website, you can kind of remove a little bit of the Trubisky effect from him, because we all know that Allen Robinson is a fantastically talented wide receiver. We saw it in Jacksonville. We still know that about him. So it also factors in the fact that how much separation was he able to get from his defenders, how much space were they giving him at the line of scrimmage, and I think that's going to be part of Allen Robinson, is not only he was Chicago's number one receiver and was treated as such, and that's an important factor in this, but also it's going to account for how defenses treated you. And on the whole, Allen Robinson was treated like the Chicago Bears' number one wide receiver.
Julio Jones, Chris Godwin, who had a monster year for Tampa, Devontae Adams, the number one guy in Green Bay, a couple of tight ends, Travis Kelce, elite, Zach Ertz, elite, but I don't see George Kittle.
Mm-hmm. So Kittle missed two games, I believe.
Yep.
And that's an interesting one to me, because that's one I didn't catch when I was doing this, because I was mostly focused on the Titans players when I was evaluating this.
Yep.
And George Kittle, when I think about that, it has to have something to do with the scheme they're playing in and how much they run the ball to an extent, but also looking at Kittle and where he's placed, I mean, it's just basically a difference in grouping at that point, and that they basically how this algorithm read over George Kittle's numbers, his productions, and how he was treated by defenses was basically just a difference in that they didn't really think he was similar to that top tier. So yes, there is a pretty definitive top tier of players within this, but from what it looks like, it determined that George Kittle was not similar to them enough. Now, he was probably a point within this, you know, multidimensional space that we talked about last segment, where it's measuring his distance from a lot of different variables, but it determined that he's closer to being in a slightly different group. And basically, that's on the edges. That's like a mathematical difference that could be changed fairly simply. But in terms of the way I decided to go with this model from the mathematical standpoint, it put George Kittle in this other grouping.
Okay. We have a lot of Calvin trending up, trending down, right? Do these numbers, does it give you any evaluation or the ability to see whether a guy is in the elite category, the category like A.J. Brown right below, if they are trending up or trending down? Is there any way to figure that out into what you put down here?
So for what I did here, no, because this is only 2019.
So this is just this past season?
Just this past season, what they did, right? So because that's kind of the way of like removing name bias from it, because I didn't even like tell the computer what the players' names were, because that might, you know, skew the results. So it just purely took in their attributes from this season. And then when you look at it, it's basically you can easily account for...
Because I'm trying to figure out, like, okay, a guy that's we're saying is in this group today,
Yeah.
But is there a way to tell the numbers? Like, but he could, he's going up, or
yeah,
he may be going down.
You just, you need to build the, you just have to build the data set.
Gotcha.
And you can go on Next Gen Stats. I mean, I probably will at some point because I have a whole off season in front of me to keep building this out and go get 2018, 2017 and see how these groups change over time. Like,
right,
we can probably assume Julio Jones has been in the elite category, yeah, for a long time now.
Right, Michael Thomas, DeAndre Hopkins, those guys.
Exactly. So that's how you can compare across years with this stuff is, okay, well, who's moving in this direction?
But Chris Godwin wasn't.
Exactly.
If we were doing it this time last year, no way.
No, he wouldn't have been. So then that's an easy way, just comparing year over year and seeing from a production standpoint the differences in the groups they were placed in and kind of the reputations and overall outputs of those groups.
Am I looking at Tyler Lockett, Amari Cooper, DJ Shark, DJ Moore, and the AJ Brown? Am I right?
So
they're in the AJ Brown grouping?
No. So those guys, if I'm not mistaken, because I'm not looking at
are
the
they draft, elite?
Yeah, those guys were put in the top category.
Okay. So Tyler Lockett, Amari Cooper, DJ Shark, DJ Moore, all in the elite category,
yes,
as well.
And so it's important to remember from this that it's not saying, you know, oh, who is definitively like more talented or faster or something like that. It's not even giving you a comparison of archetypes or tangibles about the player. It's just telling you, well, here's how similar they were in terms of production and treatment by the defenses that they were playing against. And AJ Brown was on this interesting fringe. And so I ran several different types of this model. And when I ran a different type, those receivers you just listed were cut from the elite category. So it comes down to, when you talk about guys on the fringe like that, it just comes down to the mathematical difference of how you're calculating these different things, and that from that you can tell, okay, who's very firmly in the elite category? Well, Michael Thomas, Julio Jones, like that. And then depending on how stringent you want to be with your standards for elite, then you can change it and say, okay, well, DJ Moore was very, very good this year. So he, if you want to do a clustering with less groups like I did here, this was only six groups because there was math that told me that would be a good number. So I picked six, and that's how I grouped them of all the receivers in the NFL this season.
All right. Many, many years ago, the Titans decided to do kind of a media day where they brought all the media in and basically put you through a day of life for a football player. Like, go to meeting rooms, practice, and you picked positions. In that particular day, Calvin, I was a wide receiver, so that's hence why I was asking wide receiver questions.
Okay.
Willie on that day.
You don't see your name on the list here.
No. Willie on that day was a quarterback, so he was in the quarterback room, and he was dealing with the quarterback's
what
coach.
Year was this? I'm just curious.
This was a long time ago.
I would say early 2000s.
15 years ago, probably?
Yeah.
At least 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And I was in the wide receiver.
I graded out very well, by the way.
Oh, I'm sure you did.
I don't remember
really
analytics
nice job
back then.
Yeah.
There was no analytics.
So I'm sure you guys were just grinding the film for hours,
I think,
right?
It was just the coach, the late Mike Heimerdinger. He was my man.
Yep.
He, you know, we drew up the plays. I think we scored. I was like 7 for 8. I was Charlie checkdown. A lot of checkdowns.
Game manager type, right?
But I was right on the money.
So when we come back, how about we shift to quarterbacks?
Let's
and you
do
can kind of lead that discussion
okay.
since you do have quarterback
sounds
in
good.
Your blood.
Sounds good.
More with Calvin Smith on the other side. Darren, Donnick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Talking some football, doing a little talent evaluation of the Titans here with our own Calvin Smith. He goes by Smith A. Calvin on Twitter. You probably see him connected to our 102.5 The Game handle. You hear him in our coverage of the Titans here. So we're doing a little lead into the offseason that the Titans are facing here and trying to put a value on some of the guys that we've talked about really all year long. So let's get to the quarterbacks, Calvin. Let's specifically get to Ryan Tannehill here. Your data system using the Next Gen Stats website and the math you put in, Ryan Tannehill, not surprisingly, comes out with a very, very good grade here.
Oh, yeah. So it just depends on, you know, how stringent you want it to be in your clustering. If you wanted to keep this kind of pristine category for elite, then you generated more groups, and Ryan Tannehill didn't make the elite, elite category with Russell Wilson or Patrick Mahomes or something, and I don't think anybody is really going to come out and say Ryan Tannehill is one of those guys, but Ryan Tannehill wasn't that far off, and he created this really interesting point in this whole data set, this whole algorithm that I ran, that him and Matthew Stafford were grouped together, and those were the only two in that group. That was the smallest group of all the NFL quarterbacks out there. So basically, Matthew Stafford and Ryan Tannehill were actually fairly similar in 2019, and I could kind of see why just from intuitively trying to reason through how the computer came to this conclusion. And Ryan Tannehill was a game manager for a lot of the games, but he threw the ball deep a good bit, and that's kind of one of the things Matthew Stafford is known for, is having a big arm. And so as you account for more things, like how quickly they got rid of the ball and stuff like that, Ryan Tannehill and Matthew Stafford became pretty comparable. But also, you know, as you get curious and you try to run different looks at it, okay, what if we take off some of the level for the elite category and you kind of make the groupings bigger and less groups? Well, Ryan Tannehill did end up going into the elite category. So Ryan Tannehill essentially was a fringe top-tier quarterback in 2019 based on a grouping of his next-gen stats outputs.
And that would match up with your eye test, right? He played tremendously well, was a perfect fit for the offense. So based on this, how comfortable would you be to signing him to the next contract? That's really the key question. Is this sustainable? What does your data tell you?
So this clustering tells you that you have to pay him no matter what. That's kind of what the clustering and the groupings that you get would say, is this guy, based on how he played in 2019, is a very valuable quarterback. But then you get into kind of a different question when you talk about, well, is he going to be able to do that again? Is it,
because that's
what he did here,
question,
predictive?
Right?
And based on everything I know right now, I could not feasibly come out here and say that I think Ryan Tannehill is going to be the same guy next season. Because when you look at how often he completed passes while maintaining such a deep depth of target for how far down the field he was throwing, if I'm not mistaken, this guy was third in the NFL in average depth of target and also completed 70% of his passes. That's like Drew Brees kind of completion percentage with a higher depth of target than Patrick Mahomes.
When
this
you say
season.
Depth of target, we're talking about throwing the ball down the field.
How far down the field Ryan Tannehill threw the ball. That just screams unsustainability, because as you're attempting more difficult passes, it's so hard to keep doing that and doing that. I mean, even Patrick Mahomes fell victim to what you call regression to the mean. Gravity, basically.
Based on the year before, because he was so off the charts
exactly.
His first year as a starter.
Nobody can kind of escape just falling back at least closer to average. The great ones obviously sustain this over time, and then you see Tannehill defy expectations for a season. Well, he's not going to do that forever, so how far will he fall? Well, you saw Patrick Mahomes fall off and still be very, very good, but we know Tannehill doesn't have that same talent level, and now that you've seen how Arthur Smith wants to use Ryan Tannehill, how Arthur Smith works with this Titans offense, and how Ryan Tannehill fits into the puzzle seemingly perfectly in 2019, well, now all of the other defenses in the NFL get to adjust to that, and also there's absolutely a luck factor into your completion percentage and how often you complete passes above what's expected of you. Part of that with Ryan Tannehill happened. I mean, just take the Baltimore Ravens game, for example. The throw to Jonnu Smith, the one-handed catch. Great play by Jonnu. But do you bet on that happening 9 more times?
Yeah,
probably not. I mean, honestly, it's probably a 1 out of 50 occurrence. These things that... Everything broke right for Ryan Tannehill and the Titans in 2019, so therefore I couldn't say I don't think Ryan Tannehill will repeat what he did, and it makes it hard to pay him the money, but based on what he did and the clustering of it and how good he was, you have to take the chance, I think.
My historical mind, you know, I was trying to think of quarterbacks through the years who, with a change of scenery, a little more mature, maybe the pressure's off, you're a little bit more of the underdog, rediscovered themselves and had good careers and kept it going. I thought of Rich Gannon a lot during this last season. So if you're investing in Tannehill going forward, and the best thing that Tannehill has going for him is, barring the whole Tom Brady thing presenting itself, right? He's the obvious choice. You're not going to go take your chances and trying to find somebody else.
You're not going to find anything better.
But the question is, how much are you willing to invest? How long? How much money? That he's Rich Gannon and not going to, as we talked about, regress and look more, have the numbers look more like his previous stop, because you have to hope that the fit's right. You know, you got the same play caller. You're going to have, hopefully, the same weapons, hopefully the same level of offensive line. And even if you regress a little, like they were as hot, you could argue that, you know, they were as hot as any offense. They were the top five.
Maybe the hottest.
So maybe you regress down to the top 10, right? Maybe you're number 10 or number 11. You'd still say that's a pretty darn good offense you could win with.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, even if they regress to somewhere around 12 or 13, they can still be a good football team. But would they be good enough to pull off the run they had this year? And I don't know about. I don't think they would be, honestly.
And because the defense make up the slack? You know, all of these variables.
Because
right?
At times, you know, the margin they were playing on was so slim. I mean, shutting out Lamar Jackson like they did while running the ball at the historic pace that they did, it's hard to bet on that happening several more times. And when you talk about the valuation of Ryan Tannehill. In all of this, the clustering that we've been talking about had him grouped with Matthew Stafford when you went with a more stringent look at who was elite this season. Well, Matthew Stafford makes about $27 million a year. Matthew Stafford signed his contract a few years ago. So then you account for some league inflation. Tannehill at the $28, $29, $30 million range isn't out of the picture and might be fairly likely. I wouldn't say that I would
put... It's the going rate.
It's the going rate. I mean, you look at Spotrac.com. It's a contracts website.
Right.
They have this market value tool that calculates what you can expect a player to sign for. They hit Carson Wentz's contract on the dot. It's a pretty good way of doing a similar thing by clustering players based on who they compare to. They've got Ryan Tannehill at $30.5 million projected salary on his next contract every single season. Big number. Now, Would I want to pay thirty and a half?
Let me ask this question: let's give them the Super Bowl before it's not going to happen this week. If Monday, the Chiefs announce that Patrick Mahomes has signed a new deal, and it's, you know, 40-some-odd million, we know he's going to break the bank.
Oh yeah,
what does that do to that spot rack? What does it do to Tannehill's value? Would that change it?
So. According to Spotrac, they're not really comparing him to Mahomes because...
I always say Spotrac. Is it Spotrac?
Spotrac.
Okay,
Spotrac. At least that's how I pronounce it. I've seen other pronunciations. Okay. I've seen Spotrac,
too. These are
too.
All the things, right? This is not like a representative on a commercial saying, welcome to Spotrac. We just have to make our own terms, like GIF or GIF, right?
I'm a GIF guy, personally. But Spotrac, they're not comparing Tannehill to Mahomes because... They get even more specific in their determinations of these kind of comparisons because they're factoring in.
Even though the agent would.
Yeah.
Right? The agent would say, bar's changed. Oh, my guy's better.
The agent's going to John Robbins and saying, look at all this money that Dak Prescott's about to get. You got to sign now. But they're not comparing him to Patrick Mahomes. He's more along the Alex Smith, Matt Ryan type vein of what he's going to get. And if Patrick Mahomes breaks the bank, which he's going to, and he absolutely deserves all of the money he's going to get, that's going to have an effect on Ryan Tannehill, I think. I think it could push him up a little bit. But Patrick Mahomes, I don't see as directly related to what Ryan Tannehill will get, especially because I think Tannehill will sign before Patrick Mahomes.
Where is Garoppolo on this list, quarterback list?
Garoppolo, let's see. He was in a grouping that was with injured Drew Brees. So basically you get injured Drew Brees for a few games and Jimmy Garoppolo were comparable.
Was that above or below Tannehill?
Below. So
below Tannehill.
Garoppolo, good, right? Like Drew Brees, very good quarterback, but he was hurt. So you're looking at Jimmy Garoppolo as a guy who was good this season. He was also in a pretty small cluster. A guy who was good, but nothing you're writing home about.
Interesting. Once again, I don't know how much this factors into Sunday, but you look at the Chiefs, there's a lot of elites.
We saw how talented that offense is. They
the
got a lot of
49ers. I mean, I know probably it's more on the defensive side of the ball. Mm-hmm. Although Mostert, I don't know where he would rank.
Yeah, I haven't run one for the running backs yet. I'm saving
which
that.
Which is weird because if you're doing it on the full body of work, his body of work is small. It's this window now. They've been kind of a three-headed monster.
Yeah, well, that's what's so interesting about Shanahan is how smart he is about
Breida
how he can
for a while and,
is how he can hit you in every different way with so many players, and I think that's the future of the kind of NFL offense you're going to be building. Is instead of looking at someone like the Titans and saying, "Man, Derrick Henry's a monster, he's unstoppable." Well, you can also get something very, very good from a running back by committee group because of all the way different ways you can find ways to hit teams and do things differently instead of just relying on one guy.
Okay, we're going to come back and close out the hour, and we're going to have you play GM, okay? We don't need numbers. We don't need charts. We're just going to go through some of the Titans free agents, and you're going to tell us, is it going to be worth to try to keep them, or is the money going to be too much? You take it however you want, but you're going to play Radio GM, okay?
Can do.
All right, Calvin Smith on the other side to close out hour number three of Darren, Donnick, and Chase next. Elliot Friedman coming up at 1 o'clock, but right now we're going to play a little Radio GM. You be John Robinson. It's always nice to spend somebody else's money, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
So we're going to find out.
By the way, how's the Ricola test going?
It's good. It's better, I think.
It's had a steady flow during this hour.
Yeah, it's been good.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to need to get one of those hefty bags like you have of Ricola.
You know who was the first to bring the hefty bag who turned me onto it?
Pete?
Nope, Stu Grimson.
Really?
He was a big time. He had a huge barrel of that stuff.
Well, he could carry it in those mitts he's got.
Oh, yeah. Pete is more of a breezer. He's a breezer guy. Hall's breezers.
Yeah, that's true. You're right. Yeah. He has turned me on to Hall's breezers.
Yeah, got to use those, too.
I've got them.
You all got Fisherman's Friends. That's another one.
Yep.
You just have a lot of...
They have those in the media room now at Bridgestone.
I've been using some of those. I think I'm going to switch back to the Ricola, though.
Yeah?
Going back to Ricola.
Well, you've got some to spare. Thanks.
I might need one.
You might need a couple more before this day's over. You still got the hockey broadcast.
I know. Got more to do. All right, so let's start with, since we were talking about quarterback, you said Spotrek had it at $30.5 million per.
Yeah.
You willing to sign up for that? And if so, how many years? Guaranteed.
I feel like, despite the fact that I think it's an investment that doesn't pay great dividends, that doesn't have very good returns, you have no choice but to pay Ryan Tannehill because of when he took over as the quarterback, everything changed. You can't go away from that, and he's much better than what you could get elsewhere. So I think you do have to pay Ryan Tannehill. I think you do a deal like 4 years, but you structure it so that most of the money that's guaranteed is gone in the first two. Okay. And then after that, you can cut him for $4 million against your cap, and then $1 million in the final year. You have to structure it so you aren't locked in beyond 2 years. It's got to be front-loaded. That's where all the guaranteed money has to be, I think, because you're going to need to go in a different direction with your franchise at some point. Ryan Tannehill is not going to be the guy in 5 years. The Titans are still looking for that person just like they have been for a while, but Tannehill is a very good bridge option. Quarterback market's expensive, and you have to play the game.
So guaranteed money in the ballpark of 50, 60 million?
Yeah, that's about where I'm thinking. Somewhere in there. Maybe touching 70 across those years.
Okay.
But it's...
Derrick Henry, what are you going to do there?
Well, this is...
This is the tricky one.
This is where, the analytics make all their headlines, right? Because when you talk about the run game, the analytics quite simply don't...
It's going to tell you to walk away, isn't it?
It's going to tell you to walk away.
If it's too steep.
Honestly, the analytics, and I use analytics as kind of like a trigger word because there's so much more going on in this, but basically what they're going to say is that your offensive line blocked incredibly well throughout that stretch and that historically running backs reach a point where they're going to see this rapid downward spiral in production and physical strength and all these things with Derrick Henry. So, based on what we know in the past about running back value, how quickly they deteriorate and all these things, and how honestly, a lot of times, if you go draft a solid running back, they can replace a lot of what the other running back did if they're getting similar blocking in front of them. So, as great as Derrick Henry was, and as fun as he was to watch, I mean, it was something to see. He was the most difficult running back to tackle at the second level or beyond. what we know about running backs in terms of history and analyzing their production tells you that you can likely go get something comparable to what Derrick Henry has been able to do over the course of his career elsewhere at a much cheaper price, where you can spend the money you save on premium positions.
It's going to be messy. It's going to be complicated.
So all of that to say, I wouldn't do it.
Because of the numbers are very clear on this, right? And he's not saying anything that some of the number crunchers have been figuring out over the last 5 to 10 years, really.
Yeah.
But the human side, like, why did they get to the AFC Championship game? Reason number one, Derrick Henry. And he's human, right?
I would dispute that, though, even what you just said.
Really?
It was the defense. The defense held the Baltimore Ravens to 12. The defense held Tom Brady to 13. And then the defense playing so well is what allows you to run the ball like that and do what Derrick Henry does.
True.
Derrick Henry, I believe, as talented as he is very dependent on how the defense plays or how the opposing offense plays, because he can be taken out of the game. He only had 3 carries in the second half against the Chiefs.
True.
Because they have the ultimate trump card in Patrick Mahomes.
But in that locker room, who was the heartbeat that was driving the team from their standpoint? I mean, there's that part of it too.
Yeah.
Right? Who was the leader? Who was the guy, like, we give this guy the ball, good things are going to happen. He's breaking him down. Like, the things that we've always valued in football that do not go into the numbers, right? That's where it gets very tough.
Okay. Quickly, Jack Conklin.
Yes, I think Jack Conklin is the number two. You need to re-sign this guy behind Ryan Tannehill.
Okay. Logan Ryan.
Fringe. It depends on how reasonable Logan Ryan is willing to be. If Logan Ryan's willing to come in and take the discount because he wants to live in Nashville and he likes what he has here, you bring him back.
Well, he's at what, 10 plus now?
I don't think you can pay Logan Ryan $10 million again. He's not a spring chicken. You know, this is a guy who's going to be coming up on 30, playing a premium position in defensive back that relies on speed. Speed's going to go pretty quickly with Logan. As I want to bring Logan Ryan back because of the leader he is and what he means to that secondary as someone who can facilitate everything that's going on. So you bring back Logan Ryan the person, but Logan Ryan the player, you can't pay the same amount of money you just gave him. It's a fringe. It all depends on where his camp is and how much money he thinks he needs to be making.
Interesting. Calvin, good stuff. Thanks for doing
this.
Thank
you.
By the way, at Smith A. Calvin, you can follow him on Twitter. Good follow. All right, we will come back. Elliot Freeman to kick off the final hour. That's next.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.